The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And look at what we've achieved in just 2 years. An economy that is stronger, growing faster than our peers. Wages rising faster than inflation in every single month since we came to power. Investment secured, infrastructure being built. An end to austerity, with the fastest fall in NHS waiting lists for 17 years. The biggest improvement in rights for workers and renters in a generation. The biggest uplift in defence spending since the Cold War. Small boat crossings falling. Asylum hotels closing. Protecting young people from social media. And 500,000 children being lifted out of poverty because of the choices that I made. Our reputation in the world restored. With Britain once again standing up for decency, respect, and the rule of law, securing trade deals, standing with Ukraine, standing up for our values, and rebuilding our relationship with our allies in Europe. Change promised by a Labour government, change fought for by a Labour government, change delivered by a Labour government. Every decision I've taken has been about putting the country I love first. That is why I will resign as leader of the Labour Party. I have spoken to His Majesty the King this morning to inform him of my decision. I will also give my successor my full and unequivocal support, knowing that they will inherit a Britain that is far stronger and fairer than the one I inherited 2 years ago, better prepared for the challenges ahead, and better able to ensure the Labour Party secures a second term in office.
Unbelievably, we're about to have our sixth Prime Minister in 7 years. I remember growing up thinking Italy was totally ungovernable as they went through a new Prime Minister every year, and yet that's where we are here. Why is it all happening, and why did we get that big number of votes in the north of England? Well, 10 years ago, on the 23rd of June, 2016, we voted Brexit. Much of our political establishment has never accepted the result. And even those that reluctantly did, namely the Conservative Party, refused to implement what voters demanded, namely lower levels of immigration and more freedom for our sole traders and small businesses. The British public have simply had enough of political parties chopping and changing their leaders at will. We vote for somebody in a general election to be our Prime Minister. We expect them to serve their term. And barring ill health or exceptional circumstances, what is going on here, frankly, is reminiscent of a banana republic that has totally devalued the very process of general elections and democracy. Britain is broken. Six prime ministers in 7 years should convince you of that fact. The thought we're going to go through weeks, maybe months, of paralysis in a country whose debt is rising faster than any country in the world, apart from Botswana, where the boats continue to come across the English Channel every day. The whole thing is not acceptable. Let's have a general election. Let's get a government with a clear democratic mandate.
There you go. Keir Starmer steps down as Prime Minister of the UK, and you see Nigel Farage's reaction there in the cold open. Stunning. Statistics, six prime ministers in just 7 years, and then the debt levels rising faster in the UK than any other nation except for Botswana, right at the very bottom as far as sickness is concerned. There's so many different angles to what we're seeing, and not just in the UK. He mentioned even Brexit there. That's 10 years on tomorrow. That's the 10-year anniversary. And one thing about all of these anniversaries, the 250-year birthday of the United States, the 100-year anniversary of God's end-time Elijah, now 10 years on from Brexit, it really does encourage us to step back and to get some perspective. I was living in Britain when Brexit happened, and a lot of people over there were excited. And today I'll read to you what we wrote in the Trumpet magazine. Yes, yes, Britain broke free from some of the problems the EU brought upon it, but it did not, it certainly did not break free from its own sickness. As I say, there's that article and many more to get to on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Hopefully you had a nice Father's Day yesterday, some of you, all of you, perhaps. And I reminded our producer that this Friday is Bring Your Dog to Work Day. It's been a while since we've done that. And usually it gets, you know, you get moving, it gets busy, and you just don't want to take the time to do it. But listen, we bathed her yesterday. She's got an entirely different hue or color about her, which is kind of gross when you think about the level of dirtiness there that was piling high over the course of, what was it? I guess I'm not going to reveal myself to the listening audience today. Outside of that, she's a beautiful dog, and we get good feedback every time that picture plays in the opening of this show. So enjoy your dog. Hopefully you enjoyed your Father's Day experience, and hopefully you enjoy today's program. Appreciate all the substitutes that filled in last week. We've got another busy and hectic weekend planned for this weekend. That would be in South Florida. The PAC, I believe it's in Fort Lauderdale. It's, again, near West Palm Beach, the southern tip there of Florida. There's going to be a show in Fort Lauderdale as well, I think, next Sunday night. I believe they've got two shows in South Florida starting tonight and then again tomorrow. Just go to CelticThrone.com. You can get the rundown of all the cities that they're going to be playing in the next couple of weeks. I noticed just before the show, Dinesh D'Souza, the conservative commentator, he was nice enough to tweet out the information on Celtic Throne. And we're in the early stages of the discussion, but if all goes well, he may be here in Edmond for the July 12 show. That's just a few weeks away as well. So we're in the process of finalizing some of those details. Lots and lots going on, as per usual, during the summer months here in Edmond, Oklahoma. So coming back to Starmer and Britain's sickness. Britain, as you heard there, Britain is broken. Britain is sick. Herbert Armstrong, he was on it back in the, 1960s, I think it was. The sick man of Europe, referring to Britain, talking about its dying economy, talking about debt levels that have only worsened with each passing prime minister. It just gets worse. But again, just considering another angle, if you think about Keir Starmer, Justin Trudeau in Canada, Joe Biden, the fake president, all of them were elected with a lot of help from the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. That's right. In the case of Joe Biden, of course, they rigged the election. They stole it. And there's still stories coming out about the cover-up of COVID and the origins. And you add to that the way the dear leader used COVID to rig the election. They can't do it without mass mail-in balloting. That's how they cheat. That's how they put in other names, dead names, illegal immigrants' names. But all three of them, Trudeau, now Starmer, Joe Biden, they're all in many ways silenced. Just like we said about the dear leader, God would have to silence him. Now, he keeps reemerging for a speech here and there. He did it last week with his big monstrosity of a library. But God removed him. God silenced him. And the world, in a lot of ways, and you see it even in these other leaders disappearing or being silenced, the world's pivoting away from the political Antiochus. And they're going to start paying attention to the Antiochus in Europe, the European Antiochus. That's a pretty important angle to take away from all of these events, these anniversaries, the perspective that God gives to us because of the light that Bible prophecy is. America under attack. If you think about, and Hosea 5 talks about the weak leadership in Ephraim. Here you've got six PMs in 7 years. I think it's seven in 10 years. And meanwhile, here in the United States, you've got basically, if you don't count AutoPen, you've got two leaders in 18 years. And these two leaders, typed by what the Bible terms them as Antiochus and Jeroboam, these two leaders, I mean, they show two very different Americas. And that's something to think about as we come up to our 250th year anniversary. The two Americas and Obama's speech last week certainly shows that the anti-Jeroboam America still very much hates him, wants to remove him. We didn't even cover this last week, but the UFC fight that went on and just how horrible that was to be happening right there at the White House. The FBI foiled another assassination attempt on President Trump's life and a lot of his helpers, his assistants, his administrators. They were there for the fight. And these radical leftists were plotting using drones and snipers. It was real. How many times are they going to carry out an attempt to assassinate Jeroboam? That in itself shows just how sick we are. Yes, it's been in our history. Assassinations have happened in times other than our modern days. But look at the level of derangement and division and sickness and diseases like debt, skyrocketing debt. Britain leading the way. Lots of sickness to go around. And you've got plenty of prophecies that just generally describe the Israelite nations of today as being sick. There was a tweet that came out just today, a Britain over the weekend, not just transgender people out waving their signs. They're somehow disabled as well. So they're disabled transgenders. No wonder the acronym just keeps getting longer. LGBT, you're going to have the whole alphabet before it's all over. And just in looking at that tweet, what other nation besides an Israelite nation, I'm talking about what the Bible describes as, you can look at U.S. and Britain in prophecy to prove who Israel is today. And it's not just the phenomenal wealth and power and prosperity that's talked about in the latest Trumpet magazine. How did America become great? How did the British Empire become great? And then you look at the fulfillment of these prophecies, these promises that God made, even in the book of Genesis. So much proof in the Bible, in history, in our modern era, of who we are in prophecy. But then you look at the sickness. Then you look at the curses. That too identifies Israel today. What other nation, seriously, what other nation are you going to see not just transgenders, but disabled, handicapped transgenders taking to the streets, in this case, London? There's, as I say, plenty of sickness to go around. Hosea 5 and verse 13 is even more specific than some of the general prophecies referring to Israel, primarily U.S. and Britain. This one refers specifically to Britain and also Little Judah in the Middle East. That's another angle to this story. Look at that severing alliance. I've got clips of Bibi and others from the JNS gathering. I think it was in Israel recently. You look at the alliance that's unraveling before our eyes between the U.S. and Britain. You look at the Jew hatred that's just out of control, that's causing so much damage. We've covered plenty about that on this show. And the pressure continues to mount on Israel to just back off in Lebanon or wherever and just not even defend itself. Hosea 5 and verse 13, it says, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to not America, no, Assyria. Assyria, and sent to King Jareb. Yet he could not heal you, nor cure you of your wound. We talk so much about this verse with respect to Judah's wound, and that's real. It's a gaping hole in Judah's security, this wound that is the peace process, whether it's Oslo, whether it's JCPOA, or now the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, which, as it says at Fox News right now, Wall Street Journal's chiming in, it's worse than JCPOA. And it's brought on by Manasseh. Plenty of sickness to go. Manasseh, by the way, is not even mentioned in Hosea 5 and verse 13. We have so much political division and sickness. It's kind of like Daniel 11:40, where we go missing as well. We're just no longer in the game. And so they turn to Assyria. As I say, we see the pivot away from the political Antiochus, even though there's clearly still a divide in America that's about 50-50, but the world pivots away from that political Antiochus that caused so much damage, that brought in these radical leftist leaders, whether it's Canada or the UK or here in the US, a fake presidency for 4 years. And yet the world's pivoting away, and you're going to see how much longer before we see the Daniel 8 man emerge, before we see the Antiochus that heads up the Holy Roman Empire. And then to add to the angles, and again, we'll talk more about this tomorrow on the 10-year anniversary of Brexit. Herbert Armstrong said decades and decades before it happened that Britain would not be part of that union of nations in Europe. So we certainly covered that 10 years ago tomorrow on this show, on this program. Prophecies are just, they're unfolding at a pace like we've never seen. We're seeing Hosea 5 and verse 13. And there's so many others that we could point to. There's another verse, I believe it's in Hosea as well, that talks about that brotherhood band being broken between Ephraim, Manasseh, and Judah. And so we see it happening. Here's America, more divided than ever before. That's prophesied. You see the sickness. We usually refer to Hosea 5:13 when talking about Judah, as I say, but the main subject there is Ephraim. Ephraim's sickness. And then look into Hosea 5 and see what God says about Ephraim's leadership. What does that say about leaders in Ephraim when you've had 6 prime ministers in 7 years? One of them was in there for 44 days. That's Isaiah 3, basically. No, you lead them. I don't want to do it. And Starmer's out there saying, we've done so much. We've accomplished so much because of me, because of what I've done. But by the way, I'm going to have to step down. And then Nigel Farage, he drops a truth bomb on him and gives you the real story. Yes, Britain broke free from the now forming Holy Roman Empire in Europe. But it certainly hasn't broken free from the sickness that Hosea 5 and verse 13 describes. And neither, no matter how much we celebrate, on July 4th, 250 years of the Bible in the United States. That's how they plugged the Bible reading thing back in April. 250 years, as if we're really following the teachings of the Bible. Is that really happening? Or is the sickness getting worse? Richard Palmer, he wrote an article January 2023, so 3.5 years ago. He says, the book of Hosea has a lot to say about modern Ephraim. In biblical language, it analyzes the causes of modern Britain's dysfunction. Chapter 5, for example, begins by addressing the priests in the house of the king, the leaders of the nation. It says they're a snare and a net. God is putting the blame where it belongs. He quotes my father. This is from Hosea, Reaping the Whirlwind. That's a booklet that's primarily about Britain and its sickness and its problems. It's not like we're trying to be a dark cloud. But if it's in the Bible, in this case, the book of Hosea, what does it say? Who's it directed at? And if it's a strong message, if it's an unpopular message, does that mean we just ignore it? Does that mean we just pretend it's not in the Bible? Flip over to the New Testament. Look at what Jesus said in the Olivet Prophecy. Look at what John wrote about the four horsemen of the apocalypse in Revelation 6. Or the beast powers in Revelation 13, Revelation 17. Powers that behave like beasts in the field. Predators. There's a lot of them out there. And they're looking at any kind of ceasefire or stoppage of the war between the United States and Iran. Well, that's just going to benefit China, India, Russia, because Iran will have customers again. And alliances with all these other nations that hate America. It's building, isn't it? It really is building to the explosion that Jesus speaks of in Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. So we've got to brace ourselves for this. Quoting the Hosea booklet, it says, who has led the nation of Britain astray? It has been the ministers, rulers, and even the royal family. The leaders of the nation have been a snare to the people. The leaders are the problem in many cases. I mean, we have to accept responsibility for our actions as well, our sins. The sickness in Isaiah 1, it says it's from head to toe. So the head or the leadership is sick, but the whole body is sick as well. But here in Hosea 5, God draws attention to the leaders of Ephraim, and he says, you're like a snare to the people. You make matters worse. You add to the problems. Now, my father, that's the January issue, 2023. In the issue just before that, November, December, 2022, he made this statement. I believe that now that the Queen has died, Britain's demise will accelerate. That's November, 2022. The Queen died on September 8th, 2022. My father says, I believe Britain's demise will now accelerate. Well, that's happened. It is happening. Prophecies being fulfilled. We were right. We were right. We were right in what we wrote after Brexit. Mr. Armstrong was right about Brexit. Long before Nigel Farage ever came along. How did he know? How could we know? Britain's demise will accelerate now that the Queen has died. That happened in 2022. And look at what has happened since. Mr. Palmer over in our UK office, he said about Liz Truss, I think it was, she was in power or was the prime minister at the time that the Queen died. And I think she's the one that was only there for 44 days. And Mr. Palmer says she actually had some pretty good policies and ideas about what to do with the economy, what to do about lowering the debt levels. And so what happens? Well, she's out in 44 days. Come on now. You can't shake things up. Or you get voted out, and then another one comes in. Same problem here in the United States. Look at our debt levels. And as different as Antiochus is from Jeroboam, one thing they can certainly agree upon is print and spend fake money, worthless money. Just print more of it. Keep spending it. We're both pretty good at that, for sure. Ephraim and Manasseh, having squandered all of those blessings of Abraham, as they say, it's talked about in that July issue of the Trumpet magazine. The whole issue is devoted to it. All of these blessings. And Mr. Armstrong, he makes the point in U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. He says, look, once he's talking about what God says in the scriptures, God's saying, once I fulfill my promise to Abraham and bestow upon you nations, primarily Ephraim and Manasseh, all of this fabulous wealth, these blessings, the power, then it's on you to keep those blessings, to not squander them away because of your sins. Well, what has happened? What has happened? It says here, this is the article going back to, what was it, 2016, August. So Brexit happens June 23rd, 2016. Everybody's celebrating in Britain, or at least most of them. Britain, you could say, is about as divided as America is. But still, lots of hope and optimism with the Reform Party coming on strong and Nigel Farage back in 2016, just a few months later, Donald Trump miraculously beat Hillary Clinton. Change was in the air. Optimism, hope. It certainly was there in Britain. And so that happens June 23rd. The 10-year anniversary is tomorrow, as I say. And back in August of 2016, the first issue of the Trumpet after Brexit, we had an article, What's Next for Britain? You see it there on your screen. What is next for Britain? And, well, were we just trying to be a dark cloud? Did we just want to rain on the parade of optimists in Britain at that time? We said this, is this a new birth of freedom for Britain? At the Trumpet, we have certainly pointed to the flaws in Britain's relationship with Europe. We have lamented the loss of sovereignty to Europe. So is it sunlit uplands from now on? Is this the beginning of a resurgence? Sadly, no. It says, while the EU has certainly caused problems for Britain, the biggest wounds are self-inflicted and won't go away even when this divorce is finalized. So on June 23rd, 2016, Britain announced that it was divorcing from Europe. But the sickness, as we wrote, would not go away. And then look at what given what you just heard from Nigel Farage Look at the detail that we bring out. Britain has a huge debt problem. Householders are forecast to borrow at an unprecedented rate this year, higher than at any point since records began in 1987. Total household debt is at $2.17 trillion, an average of around $44,000 per person. Among the G7 group of advanced economies, only Canada has higher debt-to-income ratios. Only in these Israelite nations. It's unbelievable. It identifies who we are, whether it's Canada, Britain, the United States. It says the state of a nation's society is much harder to quantify than the state of its economy. But here, too, the situation is dire. These problems are all unconnected with the European Union. Many EU nations do not share them, and leaving the EU won't fix Britain's social problems. I repeat, leaving the EU will not fix Britain's social problems. That was in 2016. Look at these last 10 years. For America, for Britain, really for the world. And now we see the world pivoting away from the political Antiochus, and the European Antiochus is about to emerge. It says here, Britain has no leadership that can unite the nation. Guess who is the PM at Brexit time? That would be David Cameron. Remember him? And there's probably ones you can't even remember from the last 10 years. 7 prime ministers in 10 years. And we said right at the start of that 10-year period, Britain has no leadership that can unite the nation. Isn't that the case? We were right. We were right. Every major political party encouraged its voters to stay in the EU. 3/4 of Britain's MPs who declared a position on the EU voted to stay in. So here's a case where the leadership was completely at odds with the populace. And what does Hosea 5 say about the leader? You're like a snare. You're part of the problem. So the citizens, they want out. And has Britain prospered and grown since that time? Far from it. He talks about the sickness that Isaiah describes in Isaiah 1. And I forget if this is my father writing or Richard Palmer, but it says, this is at the Trumpet, August 2016, Britain's problems are deep and widespread. They cannot be repaired by a simple referendum. You see why you need to be subscribing to the Trumpet magazine? Because here we are, 10 years later, and the forecast we gave to you, it's spot on. It's so clear. What God prophesies in the Bible is sure, as Peter wrote. It's like a sure foundation. It says here, the Bible talks about God taking away leaders in Isaiah 3, quality leadership. And then the article says it does not have any leaders who can unify the country or rally it to solve the nation's problems. The Bible says further that Britain will put its trust in this European power, but that its trust will be misplaced. Here again, we read that in Hosea 5:13. Ephraim goes to Assyria, to Germany. Why? Because it sees how sick it is. It sees the sickness. It's so sick it needs help from the Holy Roman Empire. But it's on the outside looking in, just as Herbert Armstrong said it would be. It says here, whether or not the EU punishes Britain for the Brexit, we don't yet know. It's certainly possible. Either way, soon, Britain will deeply regret placing its trust in Europe. Notice this, it quotes from a 1962 Plain Truth article where Mr. Armstrong refers to this passage in Hosea 7, to be precise. It says here, the Bible gives much detail about what is coming to Britain. With the Brexit vote, we see those prophecies being fulfilled in a dramatic way. And so Britain is in disarray as far as its leadership goes. You've got the new guy coming in, the mayor of Manchester, I think. Once he got voted in, he says, I'm going to run for prime minister. And then Starmer steps down, and then you've got Nigel Farage saying, no, actually, you know, we take credit for the demise of these prime ministers. And leaders need to wake up to the Reform Party talking points. So much sickness, so much division. Leadership in disarray. Sick leadership that's like a snare. And then, for its part, in the United States for the last 18 years, you've got two leaders. Two leaders that perfectly identify or represent or typify, you might say, two very different Americas. And the America that hates Donald Trump, even if Obama had to be silenced by God. That America that hates Trump, that really hates itself, they're still there. Obama gave that speech, as I say, last week. I think it might have been Thursday. In the New Republic, it says, all honor is due to whoever decided that the opening of Barack Obama's presidential center in Chicago should come right before Donald Trump's planned July 4th gala on the National Mall. So you've got the big celebration of America's founding. And then you've got the Obama Library, the Antiochus Library, that looks so hideous and dark and ominous, really. It looks like a Star Wars machine that's about to unload fire on the enemy. And we talked a little bit about that some weeks ago. But it says about the speech, the 44th president, he said, basically the anti-Trump message was said without him actually mentioning Donald Trump. Yet in so doing, the article says, the speech also sent an implicit message to Democrats, defeating Trumpism, MAGA, and the right-wing nationalist vision of America that animates them requires something more than a small bore politics and slogans about affordability. It requires a bigger and better story, a positive and aspirational vision, a full-throated declaration of what we liberals think America is and should be instead. Instead. There was another article, we actually didn't put it in the news stack, but it talked about just the different sentiments that many Americans have that they don't go out and state openly. You know, you look at the polls and you see 20-some percent are fine with politically motivated violence. And they'll actually tell the pollster that. But then you analyze the data in another way and you can see that a lot of people, there's a big chunk that aren't going to say it to a pollster, but they, in their heart of hearts, they believe it. Well, as long as it gets rid of MAGA, as long as it removes Trump, you talk about more angles. What about the Civil War angle? How this deep, hateful division is actually going to play out in the streets of America, even Britain too. Obama has long been a spokesperson for the idea of creedal nationalism, which holds that American identity is defined by our founding ideals versus a nationalism rooted in heritage and ethnicity or race. So the Trump people are all the racists. And so Obama declared that the story of America at its best rests on shared values that make democracy possible. It quotes from his speech. I guess we should have grabbed this clip, but it says, a belief in the intrinsic dignity and worth of all people, that no one is above the law or beneath its protection, a belief in checks and balances in our government, a belief that our military and law enforcement owe allegiance not to any president or political party, but to the people and our Constitution. Now that's rich coming from the dear leader. Who's been held to account for all of the treason, for all of the illegal activity, trying to destroy Trump, spying on American citizens, using the court systems, lying to the court systems, lying through their outlets on CNN and MS Now, and carrying on for years with hoaxes, with fake narratives. Let's be blunt, the New Republic says. It's a defining fact of this moment that Trump and his movement simply do not accept any of those things. And it's important that Obama use this moment to say so. Obama also lionized the peaceful transfer of power and called for a reaffirmation of character, honesty, and integrity, and a sense of duty and honor in public life. Guess who he was talking about? Obama sees himself as a saint. For the longest time, his supporters just, they swooned. They swooned over Obama. He was a man of integrity. He was the one who authored the smoothest transfer of power back in 2016 and 17 to President Trump. Can you believe this? And the swooners in the media, they actually believe it. Here was Obama weaponizing the FBI and the DOJ, unleashing Jim Comey and then the fake investigation that was meant to really cover up Obama's lawlessness. Obama authored all of it. And he's still out there giving speeches, opening his library. You can see why God had to silence him in order to bring President Trump back. But the fact that he's still, you know, on the speech circuit just shows the level of sickness. Sickness and disease. And then you look at the way the U.S., I don't even have a lot of time to update you on Iran, but maybe I can skip ahead to, again, the severing alliance between the United States and Israel. Just to give you a bit from that Fox piece. In short, the president who proclaims to be a master dealmaker has shown once again that negotiating real estate deals simply does not translate into the world of international politics. America had all the cards, and the president played them like an amateur. Stopping the Iran war is good, you see in the title, but Trump's deal is worse than the JCPOA. This one from the Wall Street Journal. Iran and Trump blame Israel first. Well, there's another slogan. Make America great again. Blame, if they don't go well, just blame Israel. This is one thing that President Trump and his supporters have in common with Iran. Well, you just blame Israel first, obviously. President Trump's new era of Middle East peace is off to a rocky start as Iran declared Saturday it has again closed the Strait of Hormuz. So this is take what, 24? An endless cycle of gamesmanship on the part of the Iranian negotiators. Saw a clip over the weekend. They stormed out of the meetings with the United States. But tomorrow we'll probably hear about how great they are and how wonderful the peace is and how it's going to last for eternity. It says at least the Trump administration and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard agreed on the culprit, Israel. Iran insists the MOU requires that Mr. Trump treat Israel like an American proxy, though Israel is a sovereign democracy with a duty to its citizens to stop foreign bombardment. Specific examples of the anti-Israel comments from Trump in Vance. Well, it gives them in the article here. It says, perhaps Iran got this idea from listening to Mr. Trump and his vice president. Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long, Mr. Trump said last week, while declaring that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has no expletive judgment. He has no judgment. When it comes to responding against Hezbollah, when they lob missiles into northern Israel, Bibi is the problem. Not Hezbollah, not Iran. It's Bibi who's the problem. J.D. Vance was even more threatening. The Israelis, just like everybody else, have to respect this peace process that is fundamentally good for them and good for the entire region. Listen, you've got to respect the process. Yeah, and there's another clip circulating today. J.D. Vance out there saying, you know, Hezbollah needs to stop firing missiles into Israel. But then from Israel's side, I mean, if something happens, that's how he worded it. If something happens, you mean if they lob missiles into Israel, that's just kind of something? Israel needs to respect the process. Okay. So Israel has to fight with one hand behind its back, a lot of times with both hands, handcuffed. Listen to Netanyahu at the International Policy Summit in Jerusalem, clip two.
As long as we need to protect our people, we will remain in the security zone in South Lebanon. And the reason is perfectly understood. No country would be asked to do otherwise. Now, you imagine the United States across the border. You have thousands, an army of thousands of terrorists who pellet your cities and your towns with rockets and ballistic missiles and killer drones. They kill your soldiers, they kill your citizens, they kill your children, and they threaten them every day. Well, what would America do? Would it say, well, there's nothing we can do? Let's hold our fire? Is that what America would say? No. You know damn well what America would do. It would cross the border, create a security zone, kill the terrorists, and protect its people until the threat is removed. That's exactly what we are doing.
You know exactly what any nation would do if they were coming under heavy bombardment from a terrorist organization that, I guess, is allowed to stay in Lebanon. And live in a relative amount of peace, unless Israeli soldiers cross into Lebanon and go all the way to Beirut to extricate this cancer that is terrorism. I guess the international community is just fine with the terrorist group living at Israel's doorstep, comfortably in Lebanon. And then you have the U.S. negotiators out there talking about, look, we've got to do this for Lebanon. Lebanon's housing Hezbollah. It's so obvious how different the scenario or narrative would be for any other nation. But Israel's held to a different standard. Why? Because there's a lot of Jew hatred. Blame Israel. This is what the Jeroboam people have in common with the Iranian negotiators. Here's Bibi again, clip three.
So what is it that we achieved? Here's what we achieved. We prevented Iran from carrying out a plan to annihilate us, and today they would have had a nuclear weapon, an atomic bomb to do so. We prevented that from happening. We removed an existential danger. And had we not acted in Operation Rising Lion and then in Operation Roaring Lion, Iran would have had atomic bombs. And let me tell you something, they would have used them. That's what we prevented. Together with our American friends, the American Air Force, the American military, we carried out the largest airstrike in our history. We destroyed Iran's nuclear infrastructure. We knocked out 20 of their top nuclear scientists.
So he's walking a fine line. He has to say, look, we have to protect our people. And if that means going into Lebanon, then so be it. But, oh, by the way, we also just obliterated Iran, destroyed their leadership, destroyed their navy, destroyed their military virtually. Now, this is something he has in common with President Trump, because as they're being forced, as Israel's being forced to draw down, well, you've got to go out there and save face and say, listen, we're only stopping this war because we totally crushed them. The thing of it is, and this is especially so in Israel, they don't buy it. They see the mullah's survival as a victory for Iran and as a defeat for Israel. So you can talk about all the things you've obliterated, but then in the end, if you throw them a lifeline, and as we covered last week, you give them $300 billion to rebuild everything, they survive and they celebrate. They win. Even this is the Times of Israel poll. It shows close to 90% of Israelis, they believe that Iran won. They believe that this represents a defeat for America and for Israel. Listen, skip ahead to clip number 5.
And let me tell you something else. No country would do it better. No country would do it better. Because the terrorists do not just target civilians, they also hide among their own civilians. They are, by the way, are committing a double war crime in doing that. So the question is, what do you do about it? We target the terrorists, but there are some civilian casualties in every such war, in every such urban warfare. And normally, the ratio of combatants to non-combatants killed, non-combatants to combatants killed, is about 7-1, 8-1. In Gaza, it was much, much lower than that, despite all the lies and vilifications aimed at Israel. But I asked our people, our research arm in the defense ministry, I said, what is the ratio in Lebanon? And they said to me today, I just got the document today, Prime Minister, it's 5-1. No, not 5 civilians killed for every terrorist. 5 terrorists killed for every civilian that is harmed in the process. 5-1, unheard of, unheard of. Because no army goes to such lengths like the Israeli army to target terrorists and minimize civilian casualties. We should be commended for it, not condemned.
The sad truth here is that no other army does this. You think Putin's worried about killing civilians in Ukraine? It's an impossible standard to be held to. And even when they hold to this 5-1 ratio, whatever it is, it's still so easy for outsiders to blame Israel. The Wall Street Journal piece says, Mr. Trump now finds himself in a position of attacking the best U.S. ally in a region for defending itself. Like Barack Obama, he risks becoming an apologist for Iran. Well, here's something the Trump administration actually has in common with Obama. I talked about how both sides love to spend, print money and spend it. And both sides, the two Americas, the Antiochus America and the Jeroboam America, they both are an apologist for Iran. They both so easily blame Israel. And that too, that's another prophetic development amid all of these others I've tried to touch on today's show, that we've got to keep our eyes on. Because events are moving especially fast. The U.S. and Britain in prophecy, I'm going to be talking more, too, about great again. We haven't plugged this much in recent programs. And even coming back to America under attack. That book, it's still relevant. Even with the dear leader being silenced, Now's a good time to get grounded in U.S. and Britain in prophecy, America under attack, and great again. Well, that's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.